everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this globe. I'm Rose Smith, the Events and Community Manager at Femme Palette. Femme Palette has been helping women grow in their careers since 2018, and the DEI Palette Club was launched by Femme Palette to bring together experts and enthusiasts in the DEI field. You can learn more about Femme Palette and the DEI Palette Club through our website and social media channels. Today, I am pleased to welcome you to our event on Embracing Neurodiversity at Work. With us today are Eloise Ton, a neurodivergent coach, Ashley Sigmund, senior career specialist at Career Foundry, and MK Kurgan, diversity, equity, and inclusion expert. So to begin our conversation, I thought it would be best to ask our panelists to tell us a little bit more about themselves to give you an idea of where they're coming from regarding neurodiversity. So for this, we could start with Eloise, followed by Ashley, and end with MK.
Hi, everyone. So thanks for the introduction. And so I'm Eloise. I'm based in Berlin, but originally from France. And I've been working in HR for 7 years. And my story about neurodiversity and coaching is very similar. So I think I would go about them together. I started my process of being diagnosed with ADHD 2 years ago and was diagnosed almost at the same time as I was doing my coaching. And I realized doing it that it was really helping me to manage better. And I decided 6 months ago to focus really on that. And I'm also currently focused exploring a diagnosis about autism. So that's where I am for work and for neurodiversity. And yeah, I can really see how it has impacted me at work. Looking back, I think we all had this like, moment looking back at work situation where you realize, oh yeah, that's actually there were other explanation. Now I really want to change this in the workplace because I think we can do things better.
So Ashley. Okay. So hi, I'm Ashley Sigmund. I live in Berlin, but I am from Virginia in the United States. But I've actually lived in Texas and Illinois and Rhode Island as well. I guess somewhat unusually, I was diagnosed quite young with ADHD. And went through kind of the whole school system and everything, knowing that I had this diagnosis. And when I, after I graduated from grad school, I became a career coach for people with disabilities. So I worked with people with ADHD, but also autism and many other different kinds of neurodivergences and challenges. And then here at Career Foundry, where I currently work, I supervise a team of career coaches. And it was while I was at Career Foundry that I met the wonderful MK Kurgan, who maybe would like to introduce herself as well.
Thanks, Ashley. Hi, everyone. I'm MK. I'm originally from Bolivia, but I grew up moving around to a new country every 2 years. So that really helps my ADHD brain. I spent most of my life in the Boston area. So there's some people from Boston in the chat, so hello. I'm a specialist in diversity and inclusion. I've been doing DEI work for about 8 years, and I find this topic personally meaningful to me because I have ADHD, but I wasn't diagnosed until the last semester of university, so it meant that I had to come up with a lot of coping mechanisms before then to manage education and work. So now I feel like I can share that with others. So I've been diagnosed for about 10 years. So now I feel like I've come up with even more coping mechanisms. So I can hopefully share some tips.
Thank you so much, Eloise, Ashley, and MK. I think it's really great that our audience now know a little bit more about you, your personal journey into neurodiversity and working in the field. So I think to start off the conversation and to really anchor our discussion, we're going to start with a very basic question, which is why is neurodiversity important in the workplace? So let's begin with Ashley, MK, then Eloise.
Sure. I think one reason that neurodiversity is important in the workplace is that it's in the workplace. Chances are you have already hired somebody who is neurodivergent on your team. If you're in HR or you're on a team, you probably, even if you are not neurodivergent yourself, you probably have colleagues who are. They just may or may not have told you, may or may not feel comfortable telling you. They may be having struggles that, they don't necessarily know how to communicate or don't feel safe communicating, because depending on your culture and your work experience and education and a whole host of other factors, people maybe don't know how to advocate themselves for themselves or are afraid to. So I would maybe kick off the discussion here by saying that we should be inclusive of people who are neurodivergent, because we're here. And you're on your team. We might even be in your leadership. You might even be your boss. So that's my statement.
Thanks, Ashley. Agree with that. I would also say that neurodiversity is important because people who are neurodivergent can add a new or different way of thinking to your team. They can add a different or interesting way of thinking about a problem or a project that you might not get otherwise. There's a lot of strength in the neurodivergent community. For example, people on the autism spectrum are excellent at pattern recognition, so they might be able to recognize a problem that might fly under the radar of your neurotypical colleagues. Or a dyslexic person is really good at being a big picture thinker. So they're great at helping you design projects with an end goal in mind that might be useful for those of us who are more small detail people. And people with ADHD are highly visual, highly creative, out of the box thinkers. So if you're looking for an innovative team member, get somebody who has ADHD, because they'll help you come up with great ideas that you may not have considered otherwise.
Yeah, and I also want to add, like, there's also a lot of people in workplaces that might not be diagnosed yet. Like, I think I'm one of the last late discovery of neurodiversity. And I know there's probably a lot of people in the workplace that are still waiting for that. And in the meanwhile, having already thing in place, policy processes that can support them will also make it easier for them to recognize and to also improve their life.
Great, fantastic. Now that we've identified the importance of neurodiversity in the workplace, we've kind of have some arguments to work with when it comes to, talking to leadership. Let's go to the next step. So if somebody wants to build awareness of neurodiversity at the workplace, for example, the company or the organization they work in has not yet put policies or practices in place to be more accepting of its neurodivergent employees or future employees, how can one begin this conversation and turn it into something productive? So with this, let's start with MK, Eloise, and Ashley.
Sure. So I think I'm a big fan of data. So I always think data is useful. So it can help to start with that to build awareness. So, sharing that it's an estimated 10 to 20% of the global adult population that are neurodivergent can be useful. So it could be that, yeah, either you yourself are neurodivergent or somebody in your family is, or your colleague's family. Regardless of whether you know it or not, there's probably somebody on your team who is neurodivergent, either if not yet, then at least at some point in the future you will. So it's an important skill to have, knowing how to manage neurodivergent folks, or even if you have it yourself, to learn how to recognize that in yourself and how to work with it. I think it's important to understand how different brains function, and also that this is useful not just for the neurodivergent folks on your team, but that any change that you make or how you adapt your approach as a manager or as a colleague will be better for everybody. So I think that can be useful to convince people to care. And I think also having open dialogue can help. So having maybe either a series of training sessions just to start having the conversation, or even setting up an ERG or an affinity group, so that not only does that group feel supported and can share resources and affinity with each other, but they can also provide their perspective and advocate for their needs to continue building awareness for the rest of the team.
Yeah, for me, I would say where I see some resistance is really about what neurodiversity is, because you always have this idea of like how someone with ADHD looks like, or someone on the spectrum looks like, or And there's a lot of negativity that is associated, or misconception that when someone is either in a hiring process or in the company, that they will either not want to share their experience because of everything that is associated with it. So I think whether you are neurodivergent or neurotypical, that's kind of showing what is actually could be. Like, there's a lot of books published now about different, how what it is, a lot of YouTube. So it can also be just sharing resources. Like, I think there's a lot of that also on the web that I kind of found and show that neurodiversity is much broader than one could see.
And I think you can also think small. So it doesn't just have to be a big policy or a big new initiative. You can share, you know, that you're an open person to talk to, or send signals that you are receptive to these ideas. And it doesn't, you know, not necessarily like, I am a neurodivergent ally. You know, you don't have to do it in kind of a formal way. But one thing, like, when people share that they have, you know, a loved one who is neurodivergent or has a disability, or speak openly about mental health, speak inclusively about people with neurodivergence, people with disabilities, then I see that, even if I don't know how much that person knows about ADHD, I see that as a sign, like, okay, I can have a conversation with this person and I can talk to them about the struggles that I'm having, because even if they don't know everything that there is to know, I know that they're safe. And I think that identifying, for me, when I've had to navigate this situation, I've always, like, my safety and, you know, my security has always been the number one thing that I'm thinking of first when having these conversations. You know, is this person going to be a person to talk to? So I think you can just, even by these small steps, create a more open environment in your team.
Great. Thank you so much. There's still more people joining us, so I think it's going to be a very fruitful Q&A. So moving to the next question, we do have a lot of people in recruitment or in HR here in the audience, or at least in the DEI Pilot Club. And this question is more towards what steps they could take. So many aspects of recruitment and hiring processes, for example, job descriptions, or even the way that people interview, can pose challenges that may deter neurodivergent job candidates from applying to these open positions. So how can an organization, or how can an HR or the department in general, or the organization, make these processes more inclusive, especially to neurodivergent individuals, since, as we have identified in the first question, they do tend to add a lot of value in the organization. So kind of like, how could they attract these people and show that they are inclusive and actually are inclusive? So let's start with Eloise, Ashley, then MK.
Sorry, I think there's a lot to do about hiring manager, or how they're educated, and how, like, there's always this kind of scorecard in the background that you can use to see how, where this person's communication skills are. And people are often evaluated on how well they can interact or make a study case presentation. So it would be to review a bit, what are the criteria that would make someone fit for the position? And then can also be just sharing the question beforehand if someone wants to prepare, or asking the person, what would you feel comfortable doing? Do you prefer having videos on or not? So it's really about flexibility. So that could be offer different options for hiring processes to people. It's a lot of work, but yeah.
Sorry, sure. Go ahead. I couldn't remember who was next.
I guess I can go, and then you can go, MK. It's a neurodivergent panel. The directions are, we'll do our best here with the directions. So I think that exactly what Eloise said is being flexible, being open. What I might say is that clarity in terms of the job requirements and what your expectations are going to be, clarity is more important than employer branding or brand voice. So it doesn't matter how cool and fun your tone is, you know, and all of the perks and everything that you mention, if the person has difficulty understanding the actual requirements of the job. And I think that the requirements should be that are required should be stated on the job job description, and not you try to have as little implied as possible, because I think that that's sometimes where we can struggle, is where when we're trying to understand a job or a job requirements, is trying to figure out what's the difference between, like, if there's these kind of unwritten rules. So if you can start from day one with writing the job description and just making it as explicit as possible, for then and clear and easy to understand, then that too can be really go a long way.
Thanks, Ashley. Sorry that, yeah, I do have ADHD. Working memory is hard. I would say something I've noticed is that a lot of recruitment efforts tend to be based around the behavioral interview. And behavioral interviews can be scary and uncomfortable for some neurodivergent folks, especially those who struggle with social cues or who might need more processing time to give a thorough response. So something that can help with that is to share the interview questions in advance and share the whole process in advance, so people know what they will be able to expect at each step of the process. I think there's no reason why interviews have to prompt someone to come up with an answer right away. It feels very outdated to me, unless it's something that's in the job description that you need somebody to be able to come up with a really thorough, perfectly crafted response on the spot, then there's no reason why you need to test them for that in the interview. So I think more people should start sharing interview questions in advance, and also make sure you're training your HR and hiring manager folks on how to understand certain behaviors and how to not automatically associate them with negative things. So for example, the lack of eye contact. A lot of hiring managers I've talked to automatically assume then this person doesn't feel comfortable or is not a good culture fit. But actually that person might be, feel that eye contact can be very aggressive or intimate. And so they're not going to make eye contact, and that's not a negative thing. They might be really good at the job. It's just a social cue that is not on par with neurotypical folks. So ultimately, though, I would say we should try to move away from behavioral interviews and towards skill-based interviews, because that's what you should be assessing people on, is whether they can do the job or not. So instead of asking them how they've managed, how they've handled conflict with a colleague in the past, ask them, to actually complete a task that is in the job description and assess them based on that.
Great, thank you very much. I think that we've have very specific practices that people can already apply tomorrow, so which is great. And this moves me to the next question. So one of the key insights from our conversation thus far is the importance of a supportive work environment. That's what Ashley mentioned earlier, to be more open, to be somebody that's seen as like they could share how they feel, and more specific things that they probably wouldn't be very open to share. How can we kind of cultivate this supportive environment for specifically for those who are neurodivergent? For example, as a leader, how can you provide support for these colleagues, or as a teammate, how can you kind of provide support for them? So for this one, let's begin with Ashley, MK, and Eloise. And feel free to jump in case you want to add something at the after.
Yeah, so I guess one of the things that you can do as a leader is, again, like I said, be open yourself. If this is something that you care about, you want to be under-inclusive, then share, for example, share that you attended this event. because you don't know who in your network that you work with is maybe neurodivergent or thinking they might be, and now knows that you're at least interested in supporting them. One of the ways that I became sort of open about talking about ADHD in my own workplace was because MK, because of the data that our company heard about our student employee population, hosted a really amazing talk for our leadership team and for everybody actually in the company as well on neurodivergence and what it means and educating people. And then of course, like, I was super excited to go. And then, you know, as soon as like it was over, we started like chatting about it and having this whole conversation. And then that led to the affinity group that MK created, which has like, just, I met like so many people in my company that are neurodivergent too, including people really senior level. Which has just made me feel so included in my company and seen and feel safe whenever, you know, I need to have a discussion. So I think that these kind of open, it can just start with, you know, maybe realizing that you have a lot of people in your community who are neurodivergent and starting to educate people about that. And then like, you'll be, I think you can really be amazed at what can happen from that as well.
Thanks, Ashley. That makes me happy. I would say, just to share some tips, I suppose, that for some neurodivergent folks, especially now that we're talking about whether we're going to be hybrid or work remotely or home office, there's a lot of conversation about that. I would just want to share that I think being in the office for some neurodivergent folks can be a struggle. Especially these open workspaces where anyone can sit anywhere. I think that can be really difficult because it can lead to sensory overload. It's unpredictable. There's, you know, might be really bright lights, or a lot of people talking or people eating. Maybe certain scents can trigger a sensory overload response. So I would suggest if you are going to have an open workspace or require people to come into the office, then have a respite room or a designated area of the office where there's low lighting and it's designated quiet work space that can help somebody take a break if they need to or just work in that area only. But ultimately, I would suggest working from home and working remotely is the best way to go for your neurodivergent colleagues. It can be a lot easier to control your working environment when you're at home. Especially if you're, for example, on the autism spectrum or ADHD, you might need a desk that is very clean, or if you can, or facing the wall so it doesn't distract you, for example. So office attendance can be difficult for neurodivergent folks. And I would also recommend offering asynchronous or flexible hours because, again, it can help somebody decide when their brain works best. Giving a person the space and time to figure out when they're going to perform their best work rather than requiring the 9 to 5 just doesn't really work for a lot of brains. I would say especially for ADHD folks, we tend to be night owls, either, you know, because of sleep issues that we developed as a coping mechanism growing up or as a result of stimulants like caffeine or medication that we have to take. So working at different hours than the rest of the population is common among ADHD folks. So having asynchronous time can really help. And then one more thing I'll say is having a handbook. I think not a lot of companies do this, but having a thorough handbook that explains the company culture can be useful because a lot of rules are not written down. So even simple as how is a meeting going to run? What is going to be on the agenda? When is it expected that I'll be able to participate? Or when is it expected, like, is there going to be open discussion? Or is there going to be a specific time where people can share questions? Even just as simple as that, writing it out and putting it in a handbook can be really helpful for some neurodivergent folks to know what to expect. I'll stop there.
And I'm just reflecting on the handbook because there's also a lot of people who don't read the handbook and then come and ask you questions as HR and how this works. And I know some people do that also neurodivergent. So I'm curious to see how we can do more than having things written on a handbook that also people maybe with dyslexia will not read, or that, like, how you can have maybe different formats, like maybe have videos or have, like, I don't know, I think we can be creative, like, on how to make things a bit more fun to also spread the information and have people actually accessing it and working on it. I think something for me that I found very interesting were events, because a lot of companies right now, they want to have their team building, they want to have go dinner together, have drinks. And for me, with sensory processing disorder, it was hell. Like, if you go to a restaurant, I was always trying to find the space and stuff. So being mindful when you organize team building, either if you are a team member or if you're a leader, to check what would work with, for everyone. Make sure that there could be a space where the person can get out without being excluded, because you always have this impression that if you're out and you start to be overwhelmed, you're still going to push. Oh, for me, I know I was going to push because I wanted to stay with people. I didn't want to feel different. And the day after, you end up being burnout, feeling overwhelmed. And that was, so yeah, with events, retreats, company retreats, also, like, be mindful when you organize social events that you don't enforce it on everyone, and that you make sure there's also, I think, like, in the office, I have a space where people can also go and decompress as well.
Great. So a lot of very practical tips right now that people can already use tomorrow and start the conversation. But what we've identified also is the need for flexibility at work. And I think MK, Ashley, and Eloise already mentioned a few tips, but maybe just one last question. How can we how can people have more flexibility at work, or what can be implemented aside from the stuff that you've already mentioned, which was already quite a lot? So I don't know if you'd like to add any additional practices or policies that people can adapt or leaders can adapt for their team members. We've already talked about different time schedules and different working ways and environment, but perhaps there's something else you'd like to add. Let's start with MK, Eloise, then Ashley.
Sure. Yeah, I think no two neurodivergent people are going to be exactly the same. So I think ask people what their needs are. You might not know. Don't assume everybody's going to need the same thing. Get people involved as well, because that helps you get buy-in and helps you, you know, be authentic to what the needs are of the people that you're going to be providing it for. And encourage your managers to ask their team what kind of communication works best for you. How do you best process information? As Eloise was saying, I think it is really important to provide multiple forms of communication so that it's accessible to various brains. So either, you know, provide it in written form, in oral form, or video form, or, you know, maybe assign a note taker for somebody who misses a meeting or who maybe doesn't, you know, process auditory information very well. And then maybe sharing a meeting agenda in advance and the meeting notes afterwards, having everything documented can really help, or recording meetings for somebody who might be wants to process it again later. Just simple things like that, I think, can really help.
Yeah, I would say also for meetings to give time, I think a bit what you were saying, MK, for the interviews to give time to people to process. Like, if you have a question, there's sometimes like brainstorming session and everybody has to be like, can be, so give time to people in meetings also to breathe, to process information, not to rush to the next topic. And I think that having an agenda, as you said, was also a really great way for people to be prepared, share resources beforehand. Flexibility, like, it's always complicated because big corporate companies, they might have more resources to create spaces, but they might also need more structured processes to, and have less exceptions that they can make. And I think at the end, like, I don't know, that it might just fall a lot on the direct manager to actually take charge there and to advocate for their direct report, to say, hey, they will need that for their teams. And yeah, so I think it can be a lot of work for a direct manager to take, like, on top of that, and also a lot of awareness, because it's not always given that your direct manager, like your manager, will know about your need or know what would be accommodating. And it can be hard because sometimes it's the company will say, oh yeah, you're neurodivergent, what do you need? And it's not always on the person to be telling, what do I need? Sometimes I don't know what I need. Like, I'm discovering every time. So I think it's there. Flexibility, like, don't always ask the person, maybe also have some awareness of, even if everybody's different, like, maybe I have already some ideas about what's possible and suggest or offer that.
Yeah, and I'll kind of just going off what Eloise said, I think that one thing you can do is to try to design your processes and design your performance management and as much as possible so that people don't have to necessarily disclose or ask for additional help in order to perform their job. One example was that I think MK mentioned behavioral interview questions, but also behavioral performance management in terms of how you get along with your colleagues and what people think of you. Those kinds of questions, if you're being evaluated on that in your performance review process, can be really stressful for neurodivergent people, because I certainly felt that way. I think in one of my performances reviews, I was mentioned to that I should focus more in meetings, which is like the nightmare advice for somebody who has ADHD, because it's like, well, it's like, okay, focus, Ashley, like focus. Meaning that doesn't work. Don't try that if you're a neurodivergent person. And that was kind of solved because I knew somebody in HR and we were talking and she was saying how she wanted to revise the performance review procedures. And because I knew that she was a safe person to talk to because she had mentioned that a loved one was neurodivergent, I mentioned my own struggles and said, you know, I really feel nervous when I feel like I'm being assessed by how much my coworkers like me or these interpersonal interactions. I feel I would really like behavior when I want performance management, maybe what I'd like to see is actually what I should be doing. So the suggestion I said was, you know, maybe instead of being told to focus more, it would have been better if I had been given guidelines on when it was appropriate to speak in the meeting, or, you know, when I needed to contribute, and better outlines on that, because that is something, knowing, you know, that we need to make sure that all of the items in the agenda are covered, that's something that I can do. I can make sure that I cover all of the topics that we need to cover by a certain amount of time, but just focus more or work on your people skills. You know, those are things that you're just, it's almost like you're being telling somebody, you know, not to be neurodivergent, which is not, I don't think anybody's intention, and also causes a lot of stress as well. So just focus on achievable when you're doing performance management for anybody, honestly, but especially for neurodivergent people, try to make sure that what you're saying are actually achievable in the context of their work and that you're evaluating the work that they're performing.
Great. Thank you so much. Now we have quite a lot of things to already work with when it comes to implementing policies and practices, and even just like knowledge about neurodivergence now. So just to close this part of our discussion, the panel discussion, and before we move on to the question and answer portion with our audience, my last question would be, what advice would you give to those who are neurodivergent and on how they could cope with their work environment? So you've been very open with your own personal journey. And perhaps if you could give yourself some advice, or if somebody gave you an advice that really helped and that you still look for now and still look and think that was really helpful and you use it every day, what advice would you give to those who are neurodivergent? Let's start with Eloise, Ashley, and then MK.
I think in the question that you sent, they were like, how people can be more productive. And for me, I was like, oh, that would be my advice. Like, stop trying to be productive in the way people think you should be productive. Like, that doesn't work. I think a lot of people who are neurodivergent, they will already put a lot of effort into trying to be productive. I think it's a bit what Ashley was saying. You need to focus and you're going to really try hard, even if it's not for your brain, because you want to do well. So I think for me, it's more like, how do you redefine productivity and what do you redefine what works for you? I know, like, how you make things fun, how you can make things into learning. Like, I think for me, it's like, yeah, listening to, when I have a very boring task, I put Disney song in the background and I do the task. It makes it fun for me and a bit less annoying. And so how you find small thing for you or break the task. Like, I think for everybody, there's something different. It's just like, stop thinking you have to be productive and you have to be 100% all the time. It's like, find what makes you, make it fun for you, what makes it work.
Yeah, 100%, because I think that we define productivity and success. First of all, we define those two as the same. But we also define, I had a tendency to define successful people, especially because I was diagnosed quite young. I identified what a successful person looked like as my non-ADHD peers. I looked at what my friends were doing who did not have a diagnosis and didn't have to like take medication every day. And I saw them as the successful and smart people and myself as the flawed person. And so if that's how you're viewing yourself as somehow, you know, the, if you're seeing success as, you know, the people who are normal, you know, and meeting this standard, then you're basically setting yourself up to view yourself as a failure, because you will never meet that. You're setting yourself up to a standard that, like, even they might not be meeting in reality. You might just be seeing what they have constructed in their professional life. So just define, instead of thinking about how you can imitate people, or, you know, how you're falling short of people who are not you, define what achievement means in terms of your brain, in terms of your values and what you need. And I think that has been the biggest, once I at least began to try to do that, I started to be able to kind of achieve more meaning in ways, and in more the in ways that were meaningful to me as well.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you both have said, Eloise and Ashley. I totally agree with that. I would also say that I think there's a big difference between you are welcome here versus we designed this with you in mind. And I think we should aspire to the latter. I think we have to move towards, you know, beyond just mere tolerance and towards true inclusion. And I come from a background in education. I was a public school teacher for a number of years, and I was an instructional designer before I transitioned to becoming a diversity and inclusion specialist. And so in my head, I'm always thinking about UDL principles, which is universal design for learning. And I think this should be applied to all work situations and all social situations. And so my tip would be, and maybe this is controversial, but I would say assume everybody is neurodivergent in some way, because you don't know if they are or aren't. But if they are, then you've provided accommodations. And if they aren't, they're probably going to benefit anyway. So that would be my tip, is as you go into this work, just assume that everybody's dealing with something, everybody's brain works differently in some way. So just, you know, prepare in advance and provide accommodations for everybody. And I think, My as somebody who is neurodivergent and sometimes struggles with this question of productivity and you know, worth related to productivity, especially coming with this American mindset about worth and productivity, I think it can really affect you emotionally, and you can become emotionally drained before you even become intellectually drained. And so I think you have to sort of plan ahead for that and work for yourself. Essentially, you have to learn how to manage yourself. There's this hilarious quote from The Office in which one of the characters is like, yeah, I'm a really great manager. It's like, aren't you a team of ones? Like, yeah, but I'm really hard to manage. So I think you have to sort of learn how to manage your own brain. And what I would suggest is, what helps me is getting an accountability buddy. So asking a colleague or a friend or even your direct manager to check in on you after a set amount of time and be like, look, and I don't know if I can give this task an hour, but in 20 minutes, I want to have done at least this. So can you check in on me in 20 minutes, or can you check in on me in 2 hours and make sure I've done something? I text my best friend and she helps me with that because sometimes you need that external stimulus to push you to, you know, release the dopamine that your brain needs to actually focus. And then also you can set reminders for yourself, like use the tools that are available to you. At Career Foundry, we used to have Slack. And so I would set either Slack reminders or a calendar reminder to be like, okay, remind me to check in about this project in, you know, in 2 hours. Or I would, you know, schedule a message to a colleague and be like, schedule a message for 2 days from now, be like, oh, remind me to check in with you about this task. And then they would text me like, did you want me to check in on you? And I was like, yes, actually, I do want to talk to you about that. But I would have completely forgotten if I hadn't scheduled this message 2 days ago. So you sort of have to find workarounds that help your brain do what it needs to do. And just be kind to yourself. Because as Ashley was saying, you can't compare yourself to neurotypical folks. Your brain just doesn't work normally. And that's a good thing because it works in a superpower way. But it can also be difficult to manage. So you have to just sort of prepare and be kind with yourself as you go through it.
Thank you so much. This has been very insightful and productive in its own way, I'm sure. So we're going to end the recording now and we're going to start the question and answer portion.